Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I'm kind of basing this study on a local current event, Mama Ruby's Holistic Mystic Expo, which is a new age type expo here in small town America. And so we have been looking at some of the spiritual psychotechnologies, I like to call them. We've been looking at creative visualization. We'll be looking at hypnosis. And then, of course, contemplative or contemplative, however you prefer to phrase it, contemplative spirituality and contemplative prayer. As we continue along in the study, we'll be looking at the other two things. We have been looking at creative visualization, as I mentioned. And actually, last week, I was finishing up with some information concerning visualization. And, of course, all of the tremendous benefits that are claimed to come from visualizing and guided imagery and positive imagery and all these kind of things. I guess you could throw positive confession in there if you wanted to be a word faith heretic. But anyway, we're kind of delving more into the New Age aspect, although there is a blending, of course, with some of the New Age ideas that have been picked up by people like Joel Osteen, who, of course, has appeared on Oprah's program, and she's one of the most preeminent New Age people out there. And he's been on her program basically saying a lot of the same things she's been saying by promoting his visualization, etc. But anyway, I mentioned that. I touched on that last week. And, just in contrast to all these wonderful and great things that are said to take place when you practice these practices, and of course, in some cases, they do, which, you know, could be attributed to the deception that takes place, that the demons do make things happen for you and claim that it's actually the power of your mind. It could be psychosomatic healing, which is spurred on by the demons. And I don't have a problem with psychosomatic healing, of course. If you get healed because you believe, you know, you take a sugar cube and that's going to heal you, and you do, I don't really have a problem with that. Personally, I mean, you know, unless it's disguising cancer or something that you should be dealing with. But anyway, you get the point that there's a lot of, if you'll excuse the term, hocus pocus going on here in the background, and a lot of deception that takes place. But it's always the pragmatic reasoning behind this. So, if it works, it must be good, right? Well, how about if it's biblical, it must be good? How about if it's not biblical, it's probably not going to be good? Somewhere down the line, it's going to catch you, and you're going to, Satan's going to have his pound of flesh, as the expression goes, out of you. But as an example of this, I want to turn back to Johanna Michelson's book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. You know, Johanna was delivered from the occult and wrote her testimony, her autobiography, about her experiences. And, of course, she practiced visualization in the Silva Mind Control group. She also ended up being involved in psychic healing and has quite the testimony. But her book is just fascinating and amazing what God has done in delivering her. But this is a testimony for everyone who is tempted to go to the other side, you know, the dark side of the force, you know, whatever, for whatever reasons Satan may be promising that it will be beneficial to you. Now, I want to read a little bit about as she had come in contact with her spirit guides that perhaps weren't being called spirit guides, but were her, you know, the individuals that were going to help her as she visualized them. And she chose Jesus and Sarah Bernhardt. But as she had got to know them a little bit farther down the road, and she would go into this altered state, it says, during the first programming session of that day, we counted ourselves down to level. We were told to enter our laboratories, and of course, and that's where they would go, this visualized laboratory, where they would be, and greet our counselors. That's what they referred, you know, Jesus and Sarah Bernhardt were her counselors, okay? I felt afraid as we went down. but tried to relax as the monotonous sound of the metronome began. Surely everything would be fine. Two figures were in the lab waiting for me, facing the wall. They turned slowly towards me as I entered. I gasped. Both Sarah and Jesus now had werewolf faces. They just stood there watching me, growling softly. I suddenly understood, I hate it when that happens, I suddenly understood they were not going away. I was going to have to deal with them face to face. After a long moment, I gathered courage and approached the two figures. As I did, they began changing. The face of Jesus flashed on, shining and loving. Then in a flash, the werewolf reappeared. The same was happening with Sarah, on and off, on and off. I forced myself to approach the figure of Jesus and said, "Lord, why are you and Sarah doing this? It frightens me." Jesus' face appeared, smiling and gently. "Do not be afraid," he said. "We only want to teach you that not everything that seems to be evil on the surface really is evil, down beneath in its essence." Yeah, that sounds like something a false Jesus would want to teach you, and that's exactly what was taking place. Thank God Johanna was ultimately delivered from this dangerous occult practice that she had gotten involved with. But I found it interesting that on the same page or the page before what I was reading, she talks about it, by the end of the day, this was Tom, her handler, the guy that was kind of the mentor or whatever, the teacher in Silva Mind Control. By the end of the day, you'll be reading cases much as the famed psychic Edgar Cayce did, with the difference that Cayce lost consciousness at his deeper levels. You'll be performing similar feats at a deep, though conscious, level of mind and will not lose control as he did. Go ahead and find a comfortable position on the floor and let's begin. And I wanted to mention that because I wanted to move in the next to the next section. I have a book called The Edgar Cayce Handbook by Mark Thurston and Christopher Fazell. And and so we're moving now into the topic of hypnotism because, as you will see, hypnotism played a large role in Cayce's life, particularly flipping him over into, or at least this had something to do with flipping him over into this contact with spiritistic beings, the demonic, etc. Anyway, let's read about it, or let's look at some of these ideas. in the handbook, in pages 97 and 98, we read, and this is the title of the chapter, "Every crisis is an opportunity." And before I forget, let me just mention this too. And I think we see this in the book. But Edgar Cayce was actually a member of the Disciples of Christ Church, which of course today is known as an extremely liberal church. Chances are it was pretty extremely liberal back then. I don't know the exact history of the Disciples of Christ or all about them, but I do know they're very liberal now. And of course that would make sense to me that Edgar Cayce was interested in going to church with his family and all that. And so, isn't that nice? You know, as I mentioned last week's podcast, of course, Helen Keller. Many people believe this blind, famous lady was a Christian. There was much talk about the Bible and everything else, when in reality, she was involved with the Emanuel Swedenborg cult, which used to be called Swedenborgianism. There's a name for you. And the name of the cult now escapes me as they've changed the name. But anyway, he was a spiritist, Swedenborg was, not unlike Edgar Cayce. So anyway, getting back to the book, and this is what the main point I wanted to make was that he thought he was a Christian. You know, Johanna Michelson thought she was a Christian. She had, I believe it was the Four Spiritual Laws of Campus Crusade for Christ or one of the other campus ministries. She thought she had become a Christian, and as you read her story, you find that then she ended up getting into the Silva Mind Control group. She ended up working with a psychic healer in Mexico who would go into a trance state and apparently work miraculous healings. Very possibly, it really happened through the power of the demons. Anyway, that's a whole different story, but I think it's relevant in that Edgar Cayce thought he was a Christian, And so let me once again go back to the book, and in chapter or principle number 11, page 97, every crisis is an opportunity for a breakthrough. In 1901, when Edgar Cayce was 23, he developed a bizarre and seemingly incurable illness. He lost the use of his vocal cords and could talk only in a whisper. This may not seem like a particularly terrible ailment, but to a budding insurance salesman planning to support his family with his new career, this illness was definitely a crisis. He went to every doctor in the area around his hometown of Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Not one of them could even determine what was wrong, let alone figure out how to cure him. Finally, in desperation, Cayce went to a hypnotist. Traveling through Hopkinsville was Hart the Laugh Man, a show business hypnotist working the local vaudeville circuit. Slightly embarrassed at pursuing such an unorthodox remedy, Cayce made his way to the backstage area of Hopkinsville's Playhouse and made an appointment with the stranger. Now I want to stop right there and just make a comment that there are those who differentiate between occult hypnosis and regular hypnosis. Like, for instance, this man who was a show business hypnotist. And we've all seen these guys, right? I mean, just about everybody, I would think, have seen the people that hypnotizes everybody and has a big laugh at everybody's expense who's been hypnotized because they don't know what they're doing or what they're being told to do and all that. And some people would differentiate between occult hypnosis, that is the type that you read about in the New Age. I knew there was a New Age hypnotist that used to attend the Whole Life Expos that I went to. And he was a hypnotist, but no question he was an occult hypnotist. But some differentiate and say, well, no big deal, no big difference. And, of course, Martin and Deidre Bobgin wrote a booklet, about a very helpful booklet about that. The name escapes me right now. But anyway, you know, dentists. There used to be dentists who would hypnotize people instead of giving them Novocaine or whatever. There may be some who still do. I don't know. But I think this differentiation, I believe, you know, this is an altered state, passive mind situation that's conducive to seducing spirits either way. And I just wouldn't trifle with it. I certainly would not recommend it. Always want to err on the side of caution, as the saying goes, when you deal with these, you know, psycho-spiritual techniques that are so popular without the church and within the church. Now, getting back to the story of Cayce, this bold move born of this desperate predicament was the first step on a journey that led to Cayce's first psychic reading, a hypnotically induced trance from which he diagnosed his own ailment. His laryngitis was quickly cured when he followed the remedies suggested in this reading. His health crisis became a breakthrough in his life, to his life's destiny. So everyone could say, well, see there, it was a good thing. Yes, it was good for him for his vocation, but really bad for his spirituality. As you look at the life of Cayce, he went from professing Christian to a proponent of reincarnation and psychic activity and all kinds of heretical New Age type beliefs. Anyway, indeed, Cayce's entire life can be seen as a series of such critical breakthroughs. In 1923, Arthur Lammers came to Cayce, not with the usual physical concerns, but to ask for a psychic reading on his astrological horoscope. This reading yielded the first reference to reincarnation. There we go. Just mentioned that. Which brought on a new crisis for Cayce, a crisis in confidence. By the way, and then it says, you know, doubting the reliability of his psychic information, Cayce returned to his spiritual touchstone, the Bible. At the end of this critical period, he broke through to a profoundly deeper vision of his faith and of the book that was its spiritual voice. And you could probably insert, you know, a redefinition of this book and his faith. But, you know, when it talks about Cayce stepping through to these new spiritual heights and what have you. There is a term called the doors of perception. And the doors of perception, the author was a practitioner of mescaline. You know, he would eat this psychedelic, it was either the magic mushrooms, that's psilocybin, I believe, but the peyote, I believe, buttons. And he wrote a book called The Doors of Perception because he was experiencing new ideas of spiritual reality. And this is actually where the rock group, The Doors, that's what their name, that's what the name is derived from, The Doors of Perception. And of course, Jim Morrison claimed to be a shaman and went into trances and everything else. But anyway, I thought that I should mention that here because that's basically what was taking place with Casey as he was going through these doors of perception. It's probably likely that he never really had a genuine biblical Christian faith and that the Disciples of Christ Church was the perfect setting, you know, being a liberal church, for him to go on into spiritual deception and away from biblical truth, as all liberal churches will take you, or where they will take you. But getting back to this book, the Edgar Casey Handbook, he says, thus the patterns of his life illustrate the spiritual truth often mentioned in the readings. Crises and trials are opportunities for breakthroughs in personal and spiritual growth. Casey is not alone in this perspective. Virtually all spiritual wisdom offers this teaching in one way or another. In the ancient language of China, the written character that represents crisis is a combination of two other words, danger and opportunity. And I've often heard New Age people reference this Chinese character, this the written character, in other words, you know, the symbol, that it has two meanings, danger and opportunity. So, interesting to me. Now, I just want to see if I missed anything here. I think I'm okay now. Again, in this book, the Edgar Casey Handbook, it also tells us, it talks about, page 90, at around the age of 10, Edgar Casey received his first Bible. Here's a little more background about his upbringing. His first Bible. With his family, he regularly attended the Disciples of Christ Church in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. As a boy, Edgar loved going to church on Sundays and listened eagerly to the adults talk about religion in the Bible. Further down the page, it says, at the age of 13, he had succeeded in reading the Bible 13 times. So, 13 years old, reading the Bible 13 times. It was during that period, while reading in his lean-to shelter late one afternoon, that he had a mystical experience. As he later told the story to his biographer, Thomas Sugru, he was reading his Bible at sunset and realized that it was nearly time for supper. Suddenly, with his eyes still on the page, he became aware of a bright light over his head, which he assumed was from a lantern carried by his mother, who had come out to fetch him for the evening meal. However, as he looked up, he met with a great surprise. The light that had caught his eye was emanating from the figure of an unfamiliar woman. Glowing as she did not seem to Edgar to be an ordinary woman at all. Indeed, behind both soldiers' shoulders, there seemed to be shaded areas that looked to him very much like the tips of wings. In short, Edgar concluded that he was being visited by an angel. And of course he was, I believe, an angel of light. I don't know, of course, more about the background of the family, but as I say, because somebody goes to some place that's called a church and studies the Bible does not mean that they are, of course, that they have the Spirit of God and that they are properly understanding the Word of God. Nevertheless, you know, it wasn't until later in his life that he had the hypnosis experience, which really brought him full bore into his calling to be a false teacher and a false healer, by the way. Many people claim healings through his channeled, or the mediumism that he, which we would call channeling today, or the New Agers like to call it, but basically as he was a medium, as he would be in an unconscious state, something that Johanna Michelson's teacher was teaching that the silver mind control people would be able to do without being totally unconscious, as Edgar was, as he was in this altered state of unconsciousness. They would be in an altered state and yet conscious, and yet supposedly being able to do the same type of healings and miracles, etc., that Edgar was doing. The apparition spoke to him, asking, if you could have anything in the world you wanted, what would it be? Without hesitation, the boy answered that he wanted to help other people, especially children who were sick. The visitor then promised that he was about to be given a wonderful gift. If he used the gift wisely, his prayer would be answered. This event was the prelude to Casey's psychic awakening. Almost immediately thereafter, he began to exhibit hints of the extraordinary psychic powers that would surface more fully 8 years later. For example, he discovered that by sleeping on his school books, he could absorb their contents with photographic recall. Man, I wish I would have thought of that when I was back in school. I was not the prized student, pupil, you know, as they say. But anyway, I don't know that that would have worked for me. I'm actually kind of glad that it probably wouldn't have worked for me. But very interesting comment there. And again, you have to remember that this psychic awakening and this you know, helping people and wanting to heal and all that stuff. Well, remember that when the Antichrist comes, he's going to come with all lying signs and wonders. You know, lying signs and wonders. And there are people, you know, false healers, etc. Johanna Michelson was involved with a healer. Just because somebody means well, they're emotionally, you know, charged to do good for mankind and all that stuff, just because they're a social justice warrior or a social gospel preacher does not mean they're serving God. Okay? That's just the way it is, unfortunately, because God has a plan, and he's interested in us finding his plan and doing it, and not what our plan is or what Satan's plan through his deceiving spirits may be. Now, okay, I think I am at least through with that page. now, yes, on page 28 and 29, there's the term creative force, and under the topic heading, what does God promise you? And again, remember, this is coming from authors that come from a spiritistic, psychic, New Age type mentality and background and philosophy. What does God promise? It says, what good is God? Why should I be concerned about God one way or another? If it's true that God, or the creative force, is the source and essence of all life, then God is also the essence and source of your life and mine. God is life itself. In other words, God isn't like the chairman of the board or the president of the company, who may or may not even know you exist. Rather, God is like the blood flowing in your veins, or the air that you breathe, or the orchestrator of your dreams at night. The creative force is imminent. And of course, that's not the same word as the imminent return of Jesus Christ, but they mean it that he is present in all your experiences. And of course, he's not. I mean, if you don't know Christ, if you're not a child of God, if you've not been, baptized into the body of Christ and Christ lives through you, then it's not true that the creative force is imminent, or that God, the Father, is present in all your experiences. Now, the devil, of course, the god of this world, is. Until you know Christ, he's the one that's running the show down here with everyone. And you can read about that in Ephesians chapter 2. Unless he lives in you by being reborn, being born again by Christ, then that's not happening. That's basically a lie from the pit. Now, on the next page, he says, how does God relate to you? And we have time for this, I believe, more than enough. God, or the universal consciousness, or the creative force, initiates relationships with us. If we learn to watch and observe carefully, we can see evidence of this in our own experience. Have you ever wrestled with a particular issue in life only to find yourself accidentally, quote-unquote, meeting someone who not only understands your situation or concern, but actually has advice or information that is just what you need at the moment? And on down the page, such experiences may be seen as God or the universe extending a helping hand through coincidence, quote unquote, through encounters with people or ideas that seem accidental but have an impact on your life that is anything but trivial. You can think of these as examples of the grace of God or the gracefulness of a caring universe. Carl Jung used the word synchronicity to describe these meaningful coincidences. And of course, I have quoted from another book in earlier podcasts where a term serendipity was used, which I think is very much synonymous really with the idea of synchronicity. I don't know what the fine-tuned differences might be in those words, but I think they're very similar and the ideas are very similar. So and you know, we will talk more about Carl Jung later, probably in next week's podcast, not this one. Now, let's see if I have time for this. In Warren Smith's book, The Light That Was Dark, which is his testimonial book that he wrote, his autobiography about his experience in leaving the New Age and being shown the light. The Light That Was Dark, title of that book. And he talks in page 92 of his book about a man named Paul Solomon, who, by the way, was very similar, in my opinion, to Edgar Cayce. This man, Solomon, had apparently been a conservative preacher at one time, actually believing in the literal teachings of the Bible. Becoming disillusioned and oppressed by his faith, he started questioning his beliefs. Then one day, in the middle of a session with a hypnotist, Solomon started speaking with an all-knowing voice that amazed the hypnotist with its range and breadth and depth of knowledge. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like anybody you know? That sounds like Edgar Cayce, you know, a later version of Edgar Cayce. By the way, I was at a New Age, or actually it was a UFO conference some time ago, and there was a gentleman there speaking, I forgot his name, and he claimed to be the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, or at least that's what he was saying at the time. I still see the guy on the History Channel and other times talking. I guess he's hit the big time now, but I don't think he makes that claim anymore. And Paul Solomon, of course, wasn't claiming to be a reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, but it sounds like he was dealing with some of the same deceiving spirits, and hypnotism was the means by which he got in contact. So very dangerous practice, and then also very interesting that according to Warren, he was a conservative preacher at one time. Apparently, he says. Apparently. So apparently it didn't stick, let's say. But anyway, I'm out of time, and I hope you're finding this interesting. I find it fascinating and also a bit creepy. But thank God that we have the victory in Christ, and he has already defeated our foe. God bless you. I hope we'll see you next week.